A few years ago on a Saturday, I sat with 10 to 15 people for a meditation practice. It's just a few hours in the morning. This particular community offered an extended group practice, one Saturday a month. There was always a mix of sitting meditation, moving meditation, Dharma talks, sharing. I was there in my own willful attempt at reconnecting to a regular meditation practice. It was probably January. It was probably the 10th time I'd made a New Year's resolution to try to meditate more. I would normally get until about mid-February or so when the momentum of daily living and the stickiness of old patterns would take up the whole day again. Anybody relate to this a little? Okay. But nevertheless, I was there. And at a certain point, the main teacher invited us into a practice that included a visualization. She said, imagine you have a small stone, and that the stone represents the word discipline. As you sink into your seat, she said, your eyes closed or with a soft gaze to the ground, imagine taking this symbolic stone into your body and just notice, was her main direction. Just notice what happens. I felt my feathers bristle just in the introduction, feeling a very quick resistance to the word discipline. Maybe someone agrees, yes, but I felt open to the practice nonetheless. So I settled into my cushion space, took a few grounded breaths, and tried to pay attention to the way I responded to this symbolic stone. And as it entered into my body, I immediately vomited it out. True story, symbolically, of course. Yes, it was like a gag reflex, something unwanted, potentially harmful, maybe even poisonous, that needed to be expelled. Maybe some of you can relate. For me, though, the cause of resistance was pretty clear. In that kind of gag reflex moment, it was almost like a chain of lights lit up a trail connecting me to my experiences in my own religious past, where discipline had constrained my life as opposed to unleashing it. And some of my own experiences in more conservative Christian spaces, as well as in some strict Buddhist settings, choices for how to practice had been made for me. A list of do's and don'ts of behavior took up too much space and felt disconnected from the original why. I experienced discipline in former chapters of my life in a way that felt harmful to my growth and not supportive of it. And so during that visualization, I implicitly associated discipline with rules imposed from without, where I had little control or agency. So back to that Saturday morning, we broke up into small groups after that exercise to share and to listen, which is one of the gifts of these communal practices. And after I gushed about my whole resistance and vomiting thing, one person talked about the way for them discipline offers relief. Really clear direction and guidance for their path of growth. Tried and changed over generations in his particular Buddhist lineage. That was interesting to me. I respected it and that person's path, but something still didn't quite resonate. But then the person to my left shared their noticings, which were all about the places in her life where she did have discipline. If discipline is about committed and regular attention, this woman shared, then I'm really disciplined at taking care of other people instead of myself. I'm consistently committed, she added, discovering it all kind of right there with us. I'm consistently committed to all the reasons why I don't need therapy or support in my life. I'm really disciplined about drinking a Coke Zero every afternoon and about prioritizing work over everything else. Those last two were mine. Because what she shared did resonate. What if all of us have quite a bit of discipline operating in our lives already? And what if being more intentional about a practice, let's say introducing a spiritual or heart practice, whatever language works for you, into your life, is less about mustering up all this new effort and energy to change a daily pattern, and more about slightly rerouting your energy so that you focus your attention in a way that cultivates growth and healing, agency and freedom. Rerouting just a small piece of your energy, 5 minutes of deep breathing each day, for example, slow and steady, digging new tributaries that better support the flow of love in you and your life. Which partly means that we have to let something go. And introducing a practice into your day or week, it often and maybe even always means letting something or some things go. Saying yes here means saying no somewhere else, right? Or in the words of a Foothills member with young children, saying yes here means 17 no's somewhere else. And it's true. It doesn't really work to try to just add on a disciplined practice to your daily life. It often and maybe even always means something has to go. In part, simply because there's only so much time in a day. If you did a daily prayer bead practice this month, likely something that had been in your day was no longer. Maybe it was that extra 25 minutes of Netflix at night or some morning anxiety. With the introduction of practice, something likely has to go to make room for it. If you practice the weekly tech fast this month, maybe it involved letting go of being the first person to respond to a Facebook post, staying up to date on all messages and news, access to a constant flow of information. That letting go creates some space, both in your literal day, but also in your heart and in your mind, for the flow of life and love to move into these new openings. Bringing intentional practices into our lives is like rerouting just slightly, just a portion of our energy, guiding our intention in a direction that brings more love into our lives, that brings us closer to the flow of love for ourselves, for each other, for life. Throughout this series, we've explored discipline from different angles. Discipline as exercise, as a way of practicing, of exercising your freedom, strengthening your capacity to call on your agency and power of choice each day. We also explored the way discipline requires attention, and that our capacity for attention is not only limited, but stolen by a lot of really skilled external forces, like alerts on our phone, a 24-hour news cycle, advertisements. It's often hard to introduce these practices into our day because it's sort of like tunneling a hole of freedom through these distractions and through influences that are not invested in our freedom, but in many ways in our bondage. Aspects of capitalism, patriarchy, white supremacy, cultural forces invested in our sense of not enoughness, isolation, disconnection and powerlessness, invested in things as they are. Discipline is sort of like drawing a circle around yourself, practicing giving attention to one thing, your breath, a mantra, a prayer, the sound of an instrument or the tire of your bike on the pavement, which gradually quiets the external noise, these distractions, eventually allowing you to hear yourself, to hear your deepest self, that small, still voice within each of us. This is one of the gifts of discipline, to hear your deepest self, to grow in presence in order to more fully occupy our lives for the gift that it is. Which is not to say that a steady discipline does not come with plenty of days when it's tedious and boring. It does. Or times when you don't want to do it. There will be plenty of those. I mentioned earlier that at the time of the meditation experience with the stone, I had been trying to cultivate a steady meditation practice for years. I struggled. I found it tedious. I was often restless. And I remember one year taking an 8 a.m. Zen meditation class in seminary, where we always started off with a 30-minute sitting practice, and almost every class, or at least it felt like almost every class, I would get this like sneezing attack and a really aggressive runny nose, and I would always forget tissues. And yes, and I used to think that this wasn't part of it. Like I was doing it wrong. I was failing somehow. That this somehow wasn't part of the journey of cultivating a disciplined practice. It is. Some of us also might have a set idea about how we're supposed to immediately feel and what's supposed to immediately transform when we introduce a spiritual practice into our lives. But discipline is about the long game. It's about practice, not perfection. I heard someone say this week. Showing up in the practice with all of yourself, runny nose, and distracting thoughts is part of the practice. Letting go of any idealizations of how it should be is part of the practice. And these practices that cultivate discipline have many different shapes. UU minister Reverend Eric Walker Wickstrom offers a completely partial list of possible spiritual practices, which include journaling, meditation, peace vigils, listening to a friend, listening to music, needlepoint, anti-racism work, bath time with your kids, writing letters to the editor, painting, therapy, cardio, kickboxing, dancing, washing the dishes, and that's barely a quarter of the completely incomplete list. Washing the dishes, for example, isn't by itself a practice, right? But it can become a practice if you engage it with intention and regularity. Intention and regularity. If you practice bringing your full attention, your full heart and presence to the way the water falls from the tap and hits the back of the dish, to the feeling of your arm moving toward the soap, the sound of the bottle, the smell of citrus as a couple drops land in the sink. I'm currently trying to practice dishes as a spiritual practice. I think it should be one in my life, but I don't really want it to be one because I really don't like doing the dishes. But somehow, in these practices, in these moments, the miracle of presence reveals the magnificence of life. It's quite mysterious. The magnificence of your life as it is, of that moment as it is. Cultivating these practices is often challenging for each of us for different reasons. But it's also so worth it. And so as we end this series, part of my message to you is keep going. Whether you joined in our collective practices or you've had your own going already, keep going. And it's not too late to jump on board now and keep going with us. It's never too late to keep doing the same practice or to try a new one, to try practicing on your own or in a group, to listen for what this month showed you about what practice you actually need to do and doing that one, deciding on a practice that you will do individually and maybe one that you will do separately with your family, creating space for the differences between what works for you and what works for others. And we have a sweet spot of opportunity ahead, as Sean mentioned, the holiday season. Another set time frame, let's say from right now through New Year's, about 6 weeks, a time of year that is often full of family gatherings, which could be the perfect time to cultivate and invite in a practice. What practice do you need to commit to this holiday season in order to stay closer to love? What practice do you need to commit to this holiday season in order to stay closer to love? We're actually going to try something new this morning. We really want to know your answers to this question and to have an opportunity to share them. So I'm going to break all church rules and invite you to take out your phones as we share our answers, and they pop up on the screen totally anonymously. So you need to open up your browser and type in menti.com, and then it's going to ask you to type in a code. And if you get lost finding your way here, because I know we all have different relationships with technology, I invite you to just ask a neighbor for some help. And if you got this, I invite you to just keep an eye out and maybe support someone around you who might need extra help. What practice do you need to commit to this holiday season in order to stay closer to love? Regular sleep. Taking my medicine, remember to love each moment, being present, daily affirmations, staying present, giving, looking for joy, do more art, delete Facebook and Instagram, heart-centered meditation with my inner balance trainer, that sounds fun. Jane, I think if you click the bottom arrow, it'll go down more. Oh, this one here. Oh, close. Well, anybody have one they want to shout out that didn't get up there?
Reach out to loved ones.
Anyone else?
Walking my dog with intention.
Ooh, I like that.
How about one last one?
Family time without cell phones.
Family time without cell phones. All right, I think there may be a little bit of help coming from the back because I think it might be so fun to see them. Oh, 52, 53. So, oh, yes, there. Yay, okay. More family time, meditation, reach out to loved ones. Taking time to be fully present with my husband and my kids earlier to sleep, walking my doggies without a phone in hand. Listening better to my wife. Doing more art. Good coffee, amen, yes. Tech fast. Severely limiting access to and reading of political news. Smile more, exercise daily, be in nature more, being present with family, consistent sleep, journaling daily. Thank you all for sharing. And if you didn't get a chance to share yours, I invite you to speak it out loud to someone in your life, a friend, a coworker, a minister. Sometimes saying it out loud makes it a little bit more real. I sort of left you hanging with my earlier story, the stone and the discipline and the vomiting one. Something did shift for me that day, but I've been the most convinced of the freedom discipline can offer through personal experience, which I imagine is or will be the same for you. Amen.